Hi, this is Robbie Honda from Tanuki Cider in Santa Cruz, California, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode number 103. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are going to be speaking to someone that I really wanted to catch up with, and we're going to have a mini chat with Robbie Honda of Tanuki Cider out in Santa Cruz, California. And I'm going to catch you up on something that we were talking about in a past episode that was called A Cider Making Easy as 1, 2, and 3. We got started on the primary fermentation, and now we're going to be checking back in on that cider that you have gotten started and, thinking about what's the next steps. So we'll be with all that in just a moment. Well, Ciderville, it is so awesome to be back chatting with all of you. The past two episodes were pre-recorded. I had them go live. They were both on how cider is igniting New York City and really New York State. If you caught episode 101, that was a bunch of mini chats at an event that was held during Cider Week in New York City. And then the most recent episode, 102, was a recording from a presentation by five makers in New York State who won awards at the Royal Bath and West Show in 2017. And I think I said it was held in May, but I think it was in June. Oh, I am sometimes twisting, turning, but more or less, I think you catch my drift. Those are great episodes if you haven't caught up on that. They were pre-recorded because primarily I was traveling to the West Coast because my niece got married. I know you've been hearing a lot about dear Angela. She's happily married now. It was an amazing time. Got to hang with my family and record some episodes. So that's going to be rolling out as we go into the end of this year and into the new year. There's a lot happening in California. If you don't know, holy cazoli, that region, specifically Monterey Bay, was a major producer of apples. And if you want to see some cool flyers, why don't you check out the Instagram feed for Santa Cruz Cider Company. And speaking about Santa Cruz Cider Company, they recently sent me an email just serendipitously as I was heading in that direction of Ciderville. And I want to give you a snapshot because it really meant a lot to me. They wrote that they wanted to say congratulations on the 100th episodes or the 100 episodes. We think you are fantastic. And only you can do what you do for Ciderville. Well, I'll kind of take that, but I feel we are all pitching in to make Ciderville the bubbling place that it is. It takes many apples to make an orchard, but thank you anyways. We love hearing your adventures while always learning something new about the great big cider world out there. Even after 100 episodes, you managed to keep it fresh, educational, and interesting. You deserve more than the $100 we can donate, but we thought it appropriate at this landmark of yours. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Nicole, Natalie, and Felix at Santa Cruz Cider Company. Now, you should know that Nicole and Natalie are sisters, and Felix is Nicole's husband. All really lovely people. I haven't yet met in person Natalie. Well, actually, I did, I think, at the Portland CiderCon a couple years back. And what I really enjoyed is they kind of signed it Cider Going Up. Right on. Thank you so much. A deep bow to you all and to all the folks out there who are helping to support this podcast. I know it is tough for makers. That $100 that they sent, I know that wasn't easy to do. And I really appreciate it. So thanks again. And just on that last same note there, I'm holding a bottle. While I was out there, I was able to see Nicole. She was providing a cider tasting. Do go to their Facebook page or their website and find out where they're serving a tasting, because they're doing kind of a regular thing now every week in Santa Cruz. And who doesn't love going to Santa Cruz? This is another reason to visit, especially if you could get cider. And there was this bottle of, it's like a rosé. Oh my goodness, I couldn't believe it. It's Gravenstein dry cider, and they use the champagne method. And I had it there, and I'm holding this bottle right now like a little baby in my arms, because it is that delicious. I can't wait to open it. I'm planning on having it over Thanksgiving, because you know during Thanksgiving, as the United States Cider Association, the United States Association of Cider Makers says, so we get them screwed up all the time, is all about picking cider, or pick cider for Thanksgiving. And, you know, those of you listening, we pick cider every single day. But I'm definitely going to be enjoying this with some of the turkey, because I can't imagine a better celebratory drink. There's just so many delicious ways to serve this. So check that out. Santa Cruz Cider Company, again, thank you so very much. It's time for us to check in on our cider. And hold your hat if you are kind of sweating at the palms and saying, I haven't made my cider yet. You still have time. It's okay. It's still time. You know, some of the best pressings are late in the season, because you're going to get the real nice cider apples then too. So no worries there. But if you have made cider, it's about time that you've been checking it. You remember there's that episode, Cider Making Easy as 1, 2, and 3. That kind of got us started on just basic cider making. And now is about the time, if you pitched it around then, a couple weeks ago, I was making cider as early as, you know, mid-September into October. And then I did a bit of traveling. That gave it time to do what is called the primary fermentation. It's really the main fermentation. And I'm going to talk about what I mean about that in just a moment. But what you'll be seeing in with your cider right now is that all the heavy precipitants are dropped to the bottom, and you'll have that film on the bottom. That's called the lees, L-E-E-S, or what I like to call schmutz. But it's good schmutz in a way. You could swirl it in if you want to, and that's called batonnage, where you keep on swirling it in. You could leave it on the lees, sur les lees, or you could wreck it over. And that's what I'm doing to a lot of my ciders right now, is I'm wrecking it over. I want to take it off of the lees and move it into a new vessel. So that means that you might have to get yourself another carboy to put that in, or something of equal size to transport that initial cider into the other vessel. And I'm talking to you as someone who actually allows my cider to condition. I already made like a really early cider, like from September. In fact, my buddies Danica and Tommy were at Cider Days, because I wasn't there, set up a table, and they were pouring some wild yeast cider, basically the wild, woodland yeast that was out there. I just let it go to town. I didn't add any sugar at all. So if you got a taste of that, you would have tasted that semi-funkiness. It was a very light, I find it really refreshing, early cider. But most of my ciders that I'm making now, and I have just about 100 gallons that I'm doing this year. I don't know why I decided to do that. I just couldn't help myself, because I have that giant press. And if you're like me, you're kind of like looking at all these trees and going, I need to pick those trees. I'm still driving down the road and seeing apples and trying to figure out how I could deal with that. I even brought some Newtown Pippins back from Monterey and some Fuji apples, and I thought, Jake Mann of Five Mile Orchard was kind enough to give me a bag of each. In fact, oh, here's a little tip before I go on. He is selling some cider apples for some of you at home non-commercial makers, you might want to contact him. If you're a commercial maker, you could also contact him too, because he does that also. But he's putting out bags to bind and to get your cider making on. I brought those back. I'm thinking, can I do it? But alas, we put them in some pies and have just been eating them. Really delicious. But, you know, no apple wants to be wasted. It reminds me of Nicole Ward of Forgotten Ciders, where she mentioned during her chat with Rafe Ward, wonderful people out in Michigan. I'm hoping I'm getting that right. Yes, it's Michigan. Every apple that they have, she wants to, you know, she doesn't want to do anything except make cider with it. And that's kind of like the buzz that we have right now, isn't it, in Ciderville? But we have made cider, and we have our vessels, and we want to transport it out of the primary fermentation. The reason why you want to do that, if you just let your cider sit there and there's any kind of headspace, and what I mean is where there's the liquid and there's an air gap between that and the airlock that's sitting on top, it's designed to release the CO2. Over time, if you leave that and just, you know, ignore it for a month or two, you're going to have oxidation that will be occurring. It's not, the gas is just kind of not releasing anymore. The cider's just there and oxygen is going to get in. I don't know all the technical stuff. I just know it happens. And you don't want to have oxidized cider. It tastes like cardboard, which nobody wants to be chewing on cardboard nor drinking it. So the goal here is to get it off of the lees. Get your second vessel. You're going to rack it over with a tube. One of the little things I always use when I'm racking over is I have one straight solid tube. Sometimes you could get a little bulb at the bottom there. So if you're putting it in, it won't just suck directly up the lees into that tube too. So that's nice. I never, ever let that direct tube touch the bottom of my cider and put it into the lees. I leave it up into the clear, you know, sometimes it's hazy liquid. And I use a clothespin at the top of the carboy to hold my tubing up free out of the lees on the bottom. And then I have that the flexible clear tube that goes into my new vessel. And of course, you do a little bit of siphoning. You just get down there and start sucking on that tube until it starts coming through. Have a little cup there so you can pour a little bit off for tasting. That's always the best part of racking, isn't it? You might want to pour some in to check your specific gravity. That'll tell you if it has dropped down to 1.004 or 000 or 0.99. If all that sounds super technical to you, that essentially means that the yeast has consumed all the sugar and is primarily finished its fermentation. And conceivably, you could bottle that. And many people do. Many people like a really young cider. I, however, like to have it conditioned longer because I find that it does meld and develop more flavors. And I just love to see how that changes. Like I might taste that cider early on and be like, oh, sacré bleu, it tastes like caca. And then it changes and it's like, oh, this is wicked good. Or conversely, it tastes really good in the beginning, and then something's getting funky. It develops. There's a melding that happens again in that cider over and over. So you rack it over into that other vessel. Oftentimes, I will, before I begin that rack, I will put in a little bit of sulfite, and I mean a minimum amount. So if I'm primarily dealing with 5-gallon batches, perhaps you are too. You'll have to measure that out specific to your needs. As I'm racking that over, I'll put in some powdered. If you have a Camden tablet, break it up. Don't just put it in hold. Smash it up with a little, pestle and mortar type of thing. I think that's what it's called. Make it into powder. And I probably put about a quarter teaspoon. That's it. I really kind of avoid sulfites, and recently, all the racking I did, I didn't add any at all. Because I like to see how it happens, and I'm keeping everything clean, so I feel pretty good about that. And I'm not trying to stop the yeast at all. I want them to just slowly kick up again as the temperature fluctuates, and time is on my side, is how I see it. So you rack that all over, and there's a good chance when you rack it over, you're going to have some headspace. So what do you do with that headspace? Well, we're going to just take a pause here, and we'll come right back with that.
You gotta grab that luchi. You gotta bust that thing. Get your kicks on the street. Gotta kick back, step back. Oh, you got to ski. It's a rat-a-tat-a-rat-a-tat-a-rat-a-tat-a-bala. Rat-a-tat-a-rat-a-tat-a-rat-a-tat-a-holla. I don't wanna be pushed like a doodle push. When it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion. I don't wanna be ganked like a doodle gank. And when it comes to the cake, be me a thank. I don't wanna be pushed like a doodle push. When it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion. I don't wanna be ganked like a doodle gank. And when it comes to the cake, be me a thank.
Oh, I thought you need a little bit of rat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat. I know I do every single day. It's good for the soul. All right, that headspace in that new vessel. You've left the schmutz on the bottom behind, and perhaps your cider is still, well, a little cloudy, a little hazy. That's going to continue to drop out, but you need to do something about that empty airspace. And you have a couple options here. And it really depends on, you know, where you sit on the spectrum. I've tried it all, mainly because I have a lot of extra bottles of cider that are, they're fine. They're not spectacular. I wouldn't want to give them to anybody. I might drink them on, because I don't have anything else to drink, but I find they're perfect for using in this case. And these are some of my homemade ciders. And what I'll do is I'll just open up that bottle, make sure it's tasting okay, not going to be overwhelming, and I'll just pour that into the vessel and until that level comes up to the top. I could also get commercial cider too, but that could get very expensive if you're buying commercial cider to add into your homemade cider. So if you have homemade cider extra, use that. If you don't, another option is to use some sweet cider or fresh pressed apple juice. I often, and I actually just did this today, I took out of my freezer fresh pressed apple juice that I had gotten earlier and had just frozen in a jug. I thawed it out. I heated that apple juice up to essentially, you know, knock out the yeast that are in there. And I had it kind of boiling for a while. I don't know. Maybe there's more technical things to do. I mean, I keep it really chill when I'm making cider making. I boiled it for a couple minutes there. Then I let it cool because you don't want to pour scalding hot cider into your vessel. I let it cool. And the reason why you don't is you don't want to kill any yeast that are there, because those are going to be your dominant yeast. And if there's any residual yeast in that fresh pressed apple juice that you know, reconstituted up, they'll compete. And so if you like the yeast that you have in there, be it wild yeast or cultivated yeast, you want to keep that yeast going. So I pour it back in there into the vessel and just bring it up to level. I did that with a whole bunch of containers that I have going because I had lots of airspace. So that's the other option you could do. What I would totally not do is add water. It will dilute everything. It'll dilute the taste. It'll dilute the alcohol content. And it will dilute the flavor. Well, that's a taste too, isn't it? It's just not a good thing. Well, why add water? You're making juice. I also wouldn't add concentrated juice, like, you know, from the store, but some people do. So two options. One, primarily using other cider that's already made, that's not going to funk it out. you only just want to funk your soul, really. You don't want to funk out the cider in that way. Or that fresh pressed apple juice that you got rid of the yeast in there by boiling it for a bit. I don't think it impacts it at all. I've had total luck doing this for years. It's just how I do it, and it works. You bring that up. The amount of airspace you want to have is really minimal. But here's the warning. If you're using the fresh pressed apple juice, well, the yeast that's in there is going to start going, oh, yay, yippee, yippee. And, you know, those yeasts, they are kind of crazy beings to hang out with. They'll start eating that, and you'll get some foam. And all of a sudden, that foam and that cider, as it's kind of getting re-kicked into gear, if you have it too close to the top, it'll go up into your airlock. And then whether you're using water or something like a spirit like vodka in the airlock, it'll get all mixed up, and you're going to have to clean that out. So you'll have to leave a little bit of headspace and then kind of monitor it and then slowly pour it in to bring up just about, you know, you get away with 2 inches. I go typically like 1.5 inches, kind of eyeballing it just right. You know, true confession, I did pour in too much. I have a carboy downstairs right now where the liquid's in the airlock, and I have to go down and clean. I'll probably do it after we're done on this chat this week. But that's the fun of it. You got to monitor it. And this is what people call secondary fermentation. It's the same yeast that's fermenting. It's kind of like the conditioning time. And this is a lower, slow kind of fermentation that you just have to have a bunch of patience and let it ride through. And what will happen is, especially if your cider is cloudy, and most likely it is after that first racking, you're going to have that initial lees on the bottom, but your cider is going to still be really cloudy. It's going to take, I typically rack like 3-4 times before I even think about bottling, doing the same process every single time to get it clearer and clearer and clearer. And as it's doing that low and slow, you want it, ideally it'd be great to have it like 50 degrees Fahrenheit. That's not always a luxury that all of us have, depending on where we live. My ciders are fermenting in my basement anywhere between 60, 65 degrees. I try to keep it at that level. And keeping it dark out of the sunlight is also really important too. You're going to want to be monitoring it now. As you're going into the winter, a home could get very dry. So monitor that airlock. It's such a bummer when you go to check your cider and it's been tasting really good, but the water dried up out of the airlock. And now you have oxidized cider, and that's so sad indeed. This is a good time to check in with your friends and just say, hey, did you do your cider yet? Have you racked it over? Remind people, because there's this like wild craziness that goes on early in the fall. During the harvest, everybody's making cider, and then life gets really busy about now, and it's easy to forget it. And cider does not want to be forgotten. When the Talking Palms are back on the show, you know they'll be talking about that for sure. So don't be denied. Let that cider keep on doing what it needs to do. Let me see. Yeah, I think that's it about those notes right now. We're going to check in as we go through. I'm racking over all my cider now, and I'm going to forget about it. I'm not going to look at it probably till the end of February. And I'm going to talk more about that in a little bit. But one thing I want to share with you is, let's say you left your cider outside during the primary fermentation, and you were going to bring it in the basement or wherever you are, and it froze. And you're like, oh my God, I ruined my cider. Well, I don't think so. You're actually probably okay. And I know more than a few of us have done that. In fact, that happened to me just now. All this craziness that, you know, this fast-paced life that's been just happening to me this fall, I didn't get all my cider into the basement, and I had some vessels out there that froze. They are primarily ciders that are low in alcohol. The ones that are higher in alcohol won't freeze. I mean, you leave a can of beer outside. If it's, you know, 6%, 8%, Certainly, if it's 8%, it's going to have to really be cold for a long time before it freezes. And the bummer there is that it's been carbonated, and by freezing it, it becomes still. But if you have cider that's in primary fermentation and it freezes, you actually have an opportunity now, and you could do what I did. You could rack it off, just as we spoke about earlier, and leave the ice, which is the water, behind. And now you have a more condensed cider. I did that just because I had to get it inside. And I'll tell you, that cider's tasting really good. I had a bit of airspace because there's not as much water. And I just added in more juice, as I spoke about here. And now it's ripping down there in just a nice slow fermentation. And it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. And I'll certainly be sharing that with you. So keep it all together. No worries. Enjoy the cider ride and get back to me. Let me know how it's going. And I encourage you to be brave when making cider. The apple is just so absolutely forgiving. And in the end, you're going to come out with an amazing product. Well, luck had it when I pulled up to meet Jake of 5 Mile Orchard and record a chat with him at his family's operation, which is a large apple storage facility, and also surrounded by orchards. There next to him was Robbie Honda of Tanuki Cider. I almost flipped my lid because I've wanted to hunt down this guy ever since I started following him on Instagram. But more importantly, when Nicole Todd, I mentioned earlier, right, of Santa Cruz Cider Company, when I recorded her chat, in her graciousness, as she is and many Cruisins are, she handed me a can of Tanuki Cider. And that turned me on. I thought, oh, this is really cool. What's the story? So we're going to get a piece of that this week. I'm holding in my hand right now a 22-ounce bomber. So that's 22 ounces of cider. And it's the Zozo cider. The label work on his bottles are just something to behold. It's called a dry farmhouse cider. Both are dry farmhouse ciders. The other bottle I have is a 500-milliliter bottle. This one is called Pick It Up. And that has some crazy artwork on it. Not sure what it means, but he said, Rhea, it has a little bit to do with your last name. So, well, we're going to get that story down the line, no doubt about it. This Pick It Up, again, both are dry farmhouse ciders, has a Newtown Pippin, major regional apple in that area, Mutsu, Bellflower, and Winter Banana. He is slamming it, and I'm excited to see where Robbie takes Tanuki Cider. So let's all grab a glass and join this chat with Robbie Honda of Tanuki Cider Company in Santa Cruz, California.
Oh, interesting. Wow.
I know.
We should dip that in a barrel.
I know, right? I love that idea. I was pretty excited when I started to see that you were making cider and following your feeds on social media. So why don't we give the listeners out in Ciderville like a little demi-tasse of what you're doing. A Tanuki cider. I've seen it out in cans. I think there's 22-ounce bombers available. I saw at the Staff of Life last night.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So you got it going on. I mean, the backdrop of like how long you've been producing cider and why the heck you got into it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks first for having me. This is a cool opportunity and so serendipitous to meet you at Jake's 5 Mile Orchard today.
Oh.
So really happy and sorry for my voice. I was... at a concert on Thursday with my friend's band. And I lost it. So anyway,
give them a shout out. What's the band's name?
Oh, Thrice.
Okay. Wow. Was that in downtown?
No, it was in San Jose.
It was the first show
of their 2017 fall tour.
Wow.
Good buddies. But anyways, cider. Yeah. My mom grew up in Sebastopol, California. And my brother and I grew up going there for holidays and summers and family events from, as early as I can remember. run around the orchard with my cousins and my aunties and uncles and stuff. And that orchard has been in our family for, my kids represent the fifth generation. So
wow.
My great-grandfather planted that orchard almost 100 years ago.
Wow.
And yeah, it's gone through a lot of different phases and transitions throughout time. Yeah, I don't know how. Well, wow. One of the biggest inspirations for this project was actually the family history, because my grandparents went to the relocation camps during World War II, Japanese Americans, and they were fortunate enough to have something to come home to. A lot of other families in that area were told to take what they could carry, and then everything would be fine, and just to sell their stuff or to leave. Luckily, our family had the orchard to come home to, you know. So it's pretty amazing that it still exists and it's been around for so long. And what's also interesting is those trees are still standing, you know. They're all dry farmed, a lot of Gravenstein trees.
Right.
And so that was a big inspiration, you know. To apples have been around our family for as long as I can remember. And
so Sebastopol is a bit further south of here.
North of San Francisco.
Right. Okay. I'm getting my thank you.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
north of here, but it is kind of far north, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Approximately from, because you're based in Santa Cruz.
Yes, we live in Santa Cruz.
So are you pressing juice up there and making it up there and distributing out here?
No. All of our ciders are grown, pressed, fermented, bottled, labeled in Santa Cruz County.
Okay.
So we're not really using any of the fruit in Sebastopol. We're not using any of that fruit.
Right.
All the fruit we're using now is from this property right here in Corralitos, the 5 Mile Orchard with Jake Mann and his family.
Right.
So we've developed a relationship with these guys. Before meeting Jake, I worked for another apple grower here in Pajaro Valley in Watsonville. And before that, I ended up in Santa Cruz. I worked for a small farm here in town called Fogline. And we specialize in pasture-raised meats, pigs and chickens.
Wow.
But the original property was in Soquel, which isn't too far from here either.
Right.
And there's similar family history, similar lay of the land. They're old, standard, dry-farmed apple trees that the pigs and chickens would forage through. So that's where I started experimenting with fermentation in 2010, was on the farm in Soquel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so now the ciders that you're making, let's get a little overview of that. You're doing a little bit of a range there, right? And kind of experimenting with different things?
Yeah. I mean, we're inspired most by dry English farmhouse style ciders. My wife's from England, actually. She's from Gloucestershire, from cider country as well.
Wow.
So there's like weird little connections. We just spent some time out there this summer. Met Tom Oliver, actually.
Nice.
So lucky, yeah.
Nice.
And James from Greg Pitt. Anyways, so we're inspired by dry English farmhouse style ciders. So our production is, the way we're doing it now, is we do one large harvest and one large press a year with the different varieties of apples that we have access to. So we've been working with, the base of our ciders are Newtown Pippin, which are famous in the Pajaro Valley here.
Mm-hmm. Also known as Albemarle Pippin. So really kind of came via like New York State.
Right.
Coming over, Thomas Jefferson wrote a lot about it. Yeah.
And they had the Pippin tasting this past weekend.
Yes.
Or was that last week?
In New York. Yeah. Right. Cider Week, New York City. Right. Yeah.
So that would have been so cool. Yeah. So yeah, we're inspired by that. The Newtown Pippin out here on the West Coast, Central Coast, our own little flavor, you know. And then other apples we have access to are the Bellflower, which is an old antique heritage variety.
Mm-hmm. Kind of considered like a California-based cider.
Totally.
Or Nessa, or apple.
And
now being used for cider, yeah.
And the Mutsu.
And Mutsu.
Yeah.
Wow, interesting. I'll use it for cider, too.
Yeah.
Wow,
so that's
right,
that's basically our little... our blend. And we've been doing all stainless steel fermentation. And we do, all of our ciders are pretty traditional and to the English farmhouse tradition, except for yeast. So they're unpasteurized, unsulfured, unfiltered, high gravity, like with especially some of these dry farm trees, like 8.5% ABV, high acid, cloudy. And some of them are tart, and they have some of those like farmhousey, nuanced sour characteristics to them.
Are you waiting to pitch the yeast to kind of get that farmy a little bit, letting a little bit of the wild yeast go, and then pitching a little bit afterwards?
No, well, you know, for me, right, what we've been doing is I like to inoculate as soon as possible because we don't pasteurize and we don't filter and we use little or no SO2. So I feel like kicking off fermentation, inoculating it like as soon as possible is the best thing once it starts rolling. What we do to get some of those farmhousey characteristics is we let the, before we rack it the first time, we'll let the juice, like after it's dry, the cider sit on the lees and the sediment for a while, maybe even mix it, and then we'll rack it off the lees, and then we'll let it sit again, and depending on, maybe mix it and let it settle again, and then maybe rack it again depending on how clear we want it to be, or we'll just bottle it from that.
And it's available, as I was saying, like in the 22-ounce bottles, or known as bombers. And 4-packs of 12-ounce cans. Is that true?
So
or 16-ounce cans, too. You have some?
No, they're 12s. Okay. And we've experimented with a couple different formats, and it's pretty really interesting, actually. So started with the bombers, 22-ounce bombers. Right. And then we did the 12-ounce aluminum can, but they actually sell for singles. It's...
Okay.
We call it a dry imperial. They're 8.2%, and they were really expensive for us to produce.
Dry imperial, okay. Yeah. Using a little bit of that imperial terminology.
Yeah, right? Crossover. And actually, that's called Hurricane in the can, and that's actually filtered. So that's the difference between the bomber and the can, is that we tried to strip out some of that. Instead of adding other flavors to it to make it, you know, have a different profile, we just filtered out some of that sediment and some of that cloudiness and some of the funk to kind of make it more clean, crisp, dry, and then force carbonated it and then canned it. So that's the difference between those two.
Okay.
And then
so
we also and we also released from the 5 Mile Orchard, the 2016 vintage is in a 500 milliliter bottle.
500? Oh,
yeah, so we have the 22, the 12, and the 500 ml.
Okay.
Yeah, and those are all different.
But is that that's a different kind of cider. What do you call them, that one?
That one's Pick It Up.
Pick It Up.
Yeah, the bomber is called Zozo, and that's the 15 harvest, and that's just Pippin Mutsu. Okay. It's actually, that's like a 50-50 blend, actually. And that was the one that we tried to get some of those funky characteristics. So, and we also, with like the English like cask conditioned and also cider drinking inspiration in mind, it's very little effervescence. Like it's semi-still. The Zozo is the bomber. And then the can is filtered and carbonated, and then Pick It Up is the 2016 from the 5 Mile Orchard, and that's Newtown Newtown Pippin Mutsu Bellflower, and we threw some winter banana in there just for fun because there was like half a bin. I know it's not a cider apple, but it was kind of novel to do that, you know.
So you got it going on here. You've been doing this kind of, you know, in the same trajectory that a lot of people kind of getting in on cider at that timeline. What are you hoping for in like the next 5 years?
Oh, geez. Yeah, I was just talking to Jake about that. I mean,
perfect timing of the question.
No, but it's such a, it's so, like, where do we go? It's such a,
there's
so much happening with cider in general. We're so inspired by, and in this town, we're so lucky to have so many like really supportive and inspiring, friends in the cider community. I mean, even this last year, we did the 2017 press like a couple weeks ago, and we pressed at our friend's cidery, the Everett's. Do you follow SoCal Cider?
Yeah.
They have were generous enough to, we rented their space, but to let us use their equipment, and we brought our crew in, and of course, Nicole and Felix and Natalie from Santa Cruz Cider Company came to help out. Wow. Jake came down to help out. You know,
yeah, it's a good team of people.
Yeah, so it's just really supportive, and it feels really good. But for the future for us, it would be nice for us to find a home to get maybe a production facility, tasting room, to create our own little corner, cider corner.
It's like one step at a time in the region that you are, you're really holding the apple. You know, it's kind of like the apple and the grape right now is what it feels like around here.
Yeah.
And I think...
and berries.
you're at this like pivotal moment, and you're making a big contribution for really keeping the apple alive and viable, and even more viable than it's ever been. So the future looks bright from my perspective.
Cool.
For this region.
Yeah. Thanks. It's good to hear that. We feel it, you know.
Yeah.
Big time. Yeah. And even like you coming down and checking us out, we follow you too, you know, and we always talk about it and listen to your podcast, and for you to come down and make it's really neat to connect Yeah. I know you travel all over the world doing these having these conversations with people, and it's really cool that you're spending so much time here in Santa Cruz and connecting with a lot of
them. My pleasure. Man, it's really nice to meet you.
Thank you. You too, so much.
I can't wait till we have a little bit more time to really kick back some of this.
Yeah, I got some cider. You definitely won't leave without some.
Yay.
So.
Thank you very much, Robbie Honda of Tanuki Cider. Really great cider that he's making there, and I hope you get to try some soon. This is a classic example of the folks coming into cider making right now all over the map, both in the U.S. and international parties everywhere are in Ciderville making it happen. And I'm really excited when I get to have time, even albeit a short amount of time, to hear what's going on. Early when we started, and he mentioned you should dip that into some cider, I was actually holding the little kind of cue card that helps makers do the intro to, you know, hi, this is Robbie Honda of Tanuki Cider Company, that piece there. Well, that little piece of paper that I have that's laminated, I've been carrying all over the map, and that was the bit of the joke there that has been in all these different makers' hands, and I should dip it into cider. I kind of like that idea. Tons of fun, and we'll be catching up, I'm sure, as Tanuki and that scene keeps on going up in Ciderville. And Cider is also going up at the Cider Chat Patreon page. Patreon is a website that helps content providers like myself continue to publish this kind of information and get some kickback to support our work. So there's right now 24 patrons on Cider Chat, and that list is growing as people out there in Ciderville say, you know, heck yeah, I believe this is worth my time to listen, and I'd like to support Rhea. Sometimes it could be as little as $1 a month. It all counts. And so because of that, this Thursday, the Totally Cider Travels, which I've been talking a little bit about in the past couple episodes, will be posted to the patrons first off. I thought it was only fair. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people out there listening, and the ones who are listening and really paying for it, they should get, you know, a chance to kind of go first on the trip. And I know it won't get filled up necessarily by all the patrons. Who knows? It might. You just don't know. I do feel that this trip is going to get full because it's going to be so much fun. We're going to be hanging with these world-class cider makers, learning things along the way, doing a bit of recording, drinking a lot of cider every single day, doing sightseeing in the countryside, and not having to drive. Also staying at really beautiful places and being there right in the middle of blossom time. So become a patron if you can. That would be great. Would really help support this podcast, and look for it on this Thursday coming up, the first trip. And then I'll be posting it to everyone else next week. Along with that lines, I want to say welcome to Patreon to Carl, and also a distillery and cidery based in Utrecht in the Netherlands. That's Elegas Distillery. Elegas in Dutch means elegant. I love that. Elegant Distillery. And they're making some cider there. And what you should know about the Dutch is keep an eye on that country. I've been going there for a while, and there's a reason why they're so good at growing. They're very dedicated, devoted people. That whole region of Europe is just so exciting. Well, let's face it. Everywhere there is apples and pears and palms. It's exciting. So thank you so much. And also thank you, David, for increasing your donation via Patreon to Cider Chat. I really appreciate it. And a big tip of the glass to all of you. And a humongous a tip of the glass to the following commercial cideries who are part of the Cider Going Up campaign via Patreon. That is a Current Cider of Pennsylvania, Big Fish Cider Company in Virginia, and Ramborn Cider Company in Luxembourg. Thank you all so very much. I heard from a Polish cider maker recently, and Piotr was asking about making cider, actually in a more commercial sizes. And all I really know, Piotr, is about like 5 gallon and, you know, 10 or 15 gallon, pretty basic, but that's where everybody kind of starts, and then you just kind of extrapolate there. What is cider? Well, let me first spell it for you as I know it, and that would be C as in cat, S as in Spain, Y as in yabba dabba doo, E as in elephant, and R as in Roger. So C-Y-S-E-R, sizer. That's how I spell it. Some people throw in a Z too. But anyway, you say it, it's sizer. And that is a fermented drink of both the apple juice, the sweet fermented apple juice, and honey. Now, it is often considered a mead. And I suppose if you put almost equal parts of honey and juice together, then you definitely have a mead. But the basic recipe is as such: 5 gallons of juice, 5 pounds of honey, and then a yeast such as a sweet mead yeast. And you pick that because it leaves that residual sugars. And you can get it from a number of different suppliers. I'm not beholden to any of them. I typically use, what do I use? I use White Labs sweet mead yeast. And I've had a lot of luck with that. I'm sure they all will do the same. And it's really fun to make. In fact, I'm making one right now. And already you could smell the honey. It's like the honey of the blossoms of the trees are coming through. It's such a perfect marriage between the honey and apples. Super easy to make. That's about all I have for you, Piotr. If anybody has more commercial info for this Polish cider maker, how about if you post it on Facebook, the Cider Chat Facebook page, and help them out? There's a lot going on in Poland right now. It is a huge provider of apples, and I'm sure he would appreciate it. Well, it's come to that time where I need to roll out of here, and a little bit's coming up with me, so you're going to have to kind of hang on to the horses. I'm going to try to get up the podcast as well as I can, but there might be a little bit of a delay in the next couple weeks as I will be recovering from surgery on my shoulder coming up this Friday. So if any of you out there have ever had a shoulder surgery, you know, I guess the word on the street is, you know, it takes a little bit of recovery time. But being the eternal optimist, I know I'm going to come on the flip side, and it's going to help me reach out a little bit further for that apple in the sky. Oh, in the meanwhile, hang in there. The podcasts are coming your way. I can't wait to share so many amazing chats with you coming up. In the meanwhile, I'm rolling out. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!